That Prince Andrew Virginia photo, there's literally over 50 things wrong with that photo.
Welcome to the show, Lady Victoria Harvey.
Thank you.
When I was a teenager, you were like the posh hot girl in the papers.
Right. This photographer got a side shot of me and it was like part of a nipple. And then suddenly it was like, oh my God, Lady V has flashed.
When you were becoming the it girl in England, did you relish that attention?
It just became an increasingly sort of a pressure that as soon as I walked out the door, there's someone's taking a picture.
Talk to me about Prince Harry.
It's this whole sort of leftist victim. Oh my God, look at me, poor me. Like, no. Harry, he was never like that before he met Meghan.
You quite famously dated Prince Andrew.
Prince Andrew was like, he has been the scapegoat for this whole thing. I'm hoping like in the next few months, Prince Andrew can be exonerated from all of this.
Hey, Matt Haycock's here with a quick interruption just to say, I hope you're liking the show, but please, please like, subscribe or comment. That's how we can bring you better guests. That's how we can make the show better each week. So please, please, that's all I ever ask of you. We never charge. We never ask anything else. Just please give us a few moments of your time. Guys, welcome to Stripping Off with Matt Haycocks, where we metaphorically, of course, strip off our guests.
I know, I've got lots of layers on right now. There's definitely, it's quite hot in here.
It's only just beginning. No, we strip off our guests so we can dig deep on their story, their experiences and what we can learn from it. And I've got a great guest with us today. I have got a socialite, a broadcaster, a model, an aristocrat, aristocrat.
Well, both, yeah.
and a former it girl. Welcome to the show, Lady Victoria Harvey.
Thank you. And you said my name correctly, so that is very good.
I'm always very nervous about name pronunciation.
No, it gets confusing because it's pronounced Harvey, but we're in Harvey, so you know, it takes a while for people to get it, but thank you.
So before we get going, you have to tell me, because I remember you from when I was a teenager,
okay.
a late teenager, yeah. And at the time you were like the posh hot girl in the papers.
Right, yeah, I was in, they kept putting me on like the front page of The Sun. David Yellen, who was the editor at the time, I think had a little bit of a crush. And, basically, it really started as like I went to a party and I had a low cut dress on, and it was like, you know how the press in England, they're a little pervy, and it was like this photographer got a side shot of me and it was like part of a nipple, and then suddenly it was like, oh my God, Lady V has flashed, and you know, that made the news like worldwide. So it kind of started. I suppose I kind of rose to my it girl stardom at around about 19 years old. I left school. I had a gap year. I was going to be going to uni for 4 years to do French and History of Art. And, you know, I got some great A-levels and I was going to be going to Exeter or St. Andrews or Bristol. And then the appeal of studying for 4 years... once I started earning money and I was modeling and I was modeling internationally for big brands, you know, like Chanel and Dior, the idea of being a student. I was a boarder at school for 10 years from the age of eight.
Which boarding school?
So I was at a prep school called Sibton Park in Liminge in Kent. And then from Sibton, I went to Benenden, which is where Princess Anne was, you know, posh all girls school. In the middle of Kent, and you know, after 10 years boarding, I just saw uni as sort of an extension of boarding school, which it is. I think it's fun for people. If I hadn't already been at boarding school for so long, like friends of mine that were at day school, you know, uni was like something new. But I started working and earning money, and I was dating someone a lot older than me, so I was sort of flung into this social scene of London very young, and that is when I started being labelled it girl, because I was out everywhere. And then from that I had a column for the Sunday Times called Victoria's Secrets. So then I had this added pressure that I had to go out all the time because I had to have fun things to put in my column. And you know, those were the days that it wasn't like phones back then. You couldn't do emails on phones. Like, you know, we kind of look back at like 2001, and 2001 was the first camera phone, but it wasn't a good camera phone. It was like a little Nokia. You couldn't do an email from that.
So, don't you remember sending dirty messages exclamation marks?
Oh, it was crazy. What I had to go through to get my column in, like just say I would be like on a boat in the south of France, in the middle of the ocean. You know, I would have to find a fax machine to like fax in my column on time. And if we didn't have a fax machine, then I'd have to find one really quick. It was a lot more complicated back then.
So just taking a pause and rewinding for a second, explain to me the lady bit, because so you, I can't even say the word, but I'm going to say you. So your father is the sixth Marquis of Bristol.
Yeah. I mean,
what does that mean? How does that make you a lady? And what's the royal connection?
You know, it is. It's a long, long family history, and I'm still learning about my history every day. So my father was the sixth Marquis. My mother was the third wife of the sixth Marquis. So I actually had two half brothers. Both deceased.
Because are they materially older, were they?
They were older, yeah. They were older, but they still died relatively young in comparison to what you should live to. I was born lady, so the children of a marquis are automatically lord or lady.
So your half brothers were lords.
When I was younger, John Bristol, who was the eldest son of my father died when I was 8 years old, and he became the Marquis at the time. And then it basically jumped from him to my brother, because the other son in between died before John, about a year before Nicholas. So, yeah, my brother now is the... He was actually, I think, at the time, the youngest Marquis. He was known as
this is your full brother.
Yeah, my full brother. It was a lot of pressure for him. You know, he was just starting university. He was like 18 years old, and he sort of had that responsibility like thrust on him.
And when you say responsibility, I mean like what
it's, you are, know, you a landowner? It's a responsibility of the name. You know, so like our family house, which was being in our family for generations, it is National Trust now. But even though it's National Trust, you know, he has certain obligations. He also started a charitable trust to get the chapel redone, which is where like all my family are buried. And that was kind of falling apart. So we've had that completely renovated, and it looks amazing.
And it's been the Marquis. I'm saying that right, yeah?
Yeah.
It's been the Marquis. Is that a job? Like, is that how you get your money as well? Or
No. It would have been back in the old days, right? You know, it's a sort of, it's a responsibility that he has. Now, he has two little children. And so the eldest son of the Marquis of Bristol is called Earl Jermyn, which my brother was never that, because he was never the eldest son. But his little boy is Earl Jermyn, named after Jermyn Street. So my family back then built quite a lot of Mayfair. So that's how we got the name Jermyn.
Okay.
Yeah.
So going back to your story then. Mm. So as a youngster, as in boarding school days.
But we moved to Monaco when I was very young. And I had a mixture of living between the two, but I was, you know, I started traveling and being pretty independent young. You know, I was like the kid, unaccompanied minor with the little thing around my neck, British Airways or Air France, and I was on planes on my own, you know. For half terms, my grandmother used to take me for exeats. She lived in Kent, so that was really good.
And in terms of your childhood, let's say friends or people popping around for a Sunday roast,
right.
are they other kids of Marquises? Are they royal family members? How do you fit into all of that?
Yeah, a mixture. I mean, what I'm really enjoying is living back in England. I moved back last January. I was living in LA for 18 years. And it was time to move back, time to be closer to family. Like, I had a great time. I had, you know, I met some amazing people, but it gets, you know, it's quite a soulless place. And the last few years, California literally has collapsed, like most of America, actually. Like America has literally fallen. So, yeah. I've reconnected with a lot of old friends, but I've always been close to quite a few of my school friends, you know, because those people you bond with so much, especially when you're living together, you're in dormitories and stuff. I'm actually friends with quite a few people from prep school.
I went to a boarding prep from 11 to 13 as well, okay. Actually. I was supposed to go on to full board after that, but never did.
Did you enjoy it or not really?
You know, I can't tell you how I remember it at the time.
Yeah.
Or rather, I can't tell you how I felt at the time. But looking back at it now, it was like super fun times.
Yeah.
Because I guess, you know, you're just hanging out with your mates every day, aren't you? I mean, you've got to do school anyway, but, you know, you get to sleep there, hang out with them and stuff. I mean, I was forever in trouble, which is
why I never made it to
never made it to proper boarding school, because after getting kicked out of the prep one, my parents decided it was time to keep me at home.
Oh.
But I've forgotten why I was mentioning that now.
I don't know.
We're talking about childhood memories or bonding with people. I left there in 93.
Okay.
And I didn't have any contact with anyone, literally, because in those days, there's no mobile phones, there's no nothing.
That's it. You just have to get, like, your friend's address. And, like, if they've moved address, then you're going to lose them, you know?
And then about 2000...
Pre-Facebook days.
Well, yeah, this is it. Yeah. So about 2006, Facebook's out.
Yeah.
And somehow, you know, someone friend requests me or someone ends... Because you remember the names, don't you? I remember when Facebook first came out, you were thinking, who do I know? You know, who did I know before?
Mm.
And, you know, I got put into, like, some kind of group where people were talking about the old reunion.
Yeah.
And I went back to this reunion down at the school. So I'll have been 25, 26 at the time. Because we've not seen these people or had a word said since we were 13. And when we all met up, because we met in the pub before we went to the school, it was as if we'd just seen each other yesterday.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
So bizarre. But
that is what, like, real friendship is. Like, you know, and I had that exact thing with a lot of old school friends. Like, I'll pick up, and even the ones that I do see regularly, but then just say I was back in LA and then it was like COVID, I didn't see them for 2 or 3 years, literally, like, the conversation just goes straight back. I was down at Benetton a couple of months ago. It was like a anniversary event, and one of my old friends, I literally, because I missed the official reunion, because, you know, I'd be in LA, and it was always more complicated, like, doing those type of things when I didn't live here. And one of my friends, I literally hadn't seen her since school. She looked the same. She was, like, the same, like, so amazing. And now she's teaching little kids, actually, like, in Benenden Village. So, like, her life is really kind of, like, stayed there. She sees me as, like, oh, my goodness, you're doing all these wild, crazy things and Hollywood and this. And I'm like, it looks glamorous, but it's stressful. but... Prep school for me was super fun because we were allowed pets.
Oh, really?
And so we had, like...
We weren't even allowed chocolate.
We mated our rabbits. Like, my rabbit had babies. And, it was a fun time. Always was in trouble quite a lot. But we had, like, ponies, and we used to hide our sweet stash, like, in the horse jumps. We used to also hide them, like... in the loft, but, like, the mice would get to them. So my grandmother would always send me back with these giant bottles of Quality Streets, like those big tubs. And it was quite strict at school because you were only allowed a certain amount of tuck, you know, it was very limited. And so, like, I would be the one with, like, all the sweets. I have pretty good memories about that, but I would be in trouble. Like, I remember they would make me stand in the corridor at night just looking at a wall for, like, hours.
You're going to stand under the clock?
Yeah, and having to write lines.
Yeah.
You know, I must do, like, 100 times. Or we got caught one night sleeping in the cupboards as a dare because someone's, like, watch beeped or something. So the matron, like, heard us, and we were, like, sleeping on these shelves in the cupboard. We thought that was fun. So, yeah.
It's funny listening to what you've just been saying, because you've just used two words that I haven't fully heard either of them since 1993, which is exeat.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that's a word that is completely unique to boarding school kids. And tuck. I mean, I know people probably know tuck shop, but, you know, again, it was a boarding school thing, always abbreviated. Oh, what have you got in your tuck? What have you got in your tuck?
You know? Yeah, the tuck box was the best thing ever. So, yeah, you would have your sort of limited amount. But you see, at prep school, we didn't have the tuck box. We had that at secondary school. We had that at Benenden. But, yeah, I was always sneaking stuff in.
Well, so how old were you living in Monaco and what was that like? I'm a massive Monaco fan.
As a child, it was the best. It was a really amazing place to live because it was a lot of... We spent a lot of our time outdoors. You know, I learned to swim at the beach club in Monaco, which I think is still one of my favourite all-time swimming pools there.
Better than learning at the local swimming baths in England, isn't it?
I know. Well, when we would be then in England, it would be like the indoor pool in Victoria, the Queen Mother's, and I was like, I kind of miss the other one. But no, it was an amazing life. Very, you know, safe. The other thing, you've got cameras everywhere in Monaco. Like, literally, like, I went out with my friends quite young, you know, and my mother was not worried about me because it just felt very safe compared to living somewhere else. And actually, like, my friends from Monaco, like, I'm still friends with them that I've known, like, my whole life as well. Now to live there, it is very small. Like, it is very, like, everyone is in each other's business. Like, you can't really do anything without the whole of Monaco knowing. And so I understand that was, like, one of the reasons why my mother wanted to move back here, because it's sort of gets lonely, you know. There's not that much going on there. I think it's a great place to visit, though, and spend some time. I mean...
Do you still go back to visit?
Yeah, I do. I haven't been back since the summer, but I'll be there in May. So I usually go to Cannes Film Festival. But that is a very crazy, busy time to be there. Like, I don't necessarily like Grand Prix. I mean, for you, you probably love it because it's like testosterone central.
No, I hate it because it's too busy. I used to... So I've been living in Dubai, as I was saying, for the last 3 or 4 years. And we'd always leave for the summer. And we'd leave mid-May and I have a boat. Well, the boat is now in Dubai, but the boat used to live in Cannes. And we'd do like 4 months of the summer there and then go back to Dubai. But I'd always want to jump off it during film festival time because it was just too busy to be around. But Grand Prix,
if you're going to do Grand Prix, if I think staying on the boat is the only way to do it. Like, you cannot be staying on the land.
And having to walk around, yeah.
It's just these little things, you know. I always forget when I'm there, there's no Ubers in Monaco. Like, good luck trying to get back to Cannes. Because I rented a place in Cannes for the whole festival. So when I went to Monaco, I just thought, I'll just get the car in and out. It's fine getting in, but getting back out is like a real mission.
Well, it's not just that there's no Uber. It's a total monopoly on the taxi.
Exactly.
That you can't call any taxi apart from a Monaco taxi, which is about 12 of them, aren't there?
So, I know. I had to literally get one of Prince Albert's drivers to get me back because I was like, there's no other way I'm going to get back.
I'll have to try that next time. I'll be WhatsApping you.
So I think if you have a boat, like, yeah, if you have a boat, you can do Grand Prix, but it is like, it's a shit show. Like, it is really hard getting around and it's really stressful. And it actually made Cannes Film Festival feel like really chill. When I've been in Cannes, and Cannes felt very like full on. And then I was like, oh my goodness, because you've got the noise of the cars and it's a whole nother beast.
So you were a naughty kid. A little bit cheeky,
yeah.
but you did well at school.
Mm-hmm.
You got two A's and a B for
Yeah, I did. I was like one of those people that was a bit of fluke. Fluky child. I did a lot of like cramming at last minute. You know, we would take Pro Plus caffeine pills and be listening to Aerosmith and revising. So, French was always a language, right? That was always a subject I knew I was going to get an A in. So.
You spoke it anyway, did you?
So, yeah. Well, I was at French school. So when I was younger, I actually spoke French better than English. So that was an advantage. I would always, you know, if I had children, make them speak languages really young. because they pick it up. So.
Absolutely. So I have a new baby who's 11 months, and her mom is Finnish. Okay. And obviously not that being able to speak Finnish is probably a great life skill, but the you know, she speaks to me in Finnish, yeah. I speak to her in English, you know, obviously it's too early for it to be really making a difference, but I mean, I am absolutely adamant
that
I'm going to ram, you know, multiple languages down her throat from a very early age, because all these things, with, you know, as kids, you don't want to do anything. But then when you get to 18, You regret not, you know, like when you were a kid, you don't want to play the piano, you don't want to learn an instrument, you don't
Make
want to learn a language, you don't
do
want to
everything.
Do anything.
Yeah.
But at 18, you think, shit, I wish I could, you know, rock the guitar at the party and, you know, speak to that Spanish girl in Spanish or whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, absolutely, I'm going to ram some languages down.
Yeah, they just pick it up so easily, you know. And as you get older, like, I think of myself, like, I still write a lot. But I'm not as gutsy as I was when I was 12 years old. That was just jumping over fences without a saddle, you know. At that age, you're just not, you're invincible. You're not really thinking about, am I going to get a broken bone? And if I do, I mean, I did break quite a lot of bones as a teen. Broken arm, leg, wrist. One of them was jumping off top bunk at school. In the middle of the night, we'd play games, right, when the lights went off, and flew off top bunk, and the girl underneath stuck her head out. So I had to suddenly jump, missing her head, and then landed in, like, on my arm. So, but it's kind of fun when you break your bones at school. It's cool. Like, everyone's, like,
well,
writing
days,
on your plaster
cast. You've got your arms written
on.
It's not the same now, is it? It's like a metal one they give you.
Oh, is it? Is it metal now?
It doesn't seem to be very ceramic
anymore?
And plastered. Although I've not,
yeah,
I've not
so
seen
back
them for
then,
a while.
People are writing nice little messages and stuff.
Or not nice messages.
Oh, but the broken leg was the worst, though, because we were living in Monaco, and I remember having to put a knitting needle down it to try and itch, because it was the summer and it was so itchy. That was bad.
So you didn't go to uni in the end, did you?
No, I did not.
But you got in.
So I had a gap year, and in my gap year, I decided that I wanted to travel to Asia. And I met this girl she was at school with me, who lived in Malaysia. She was based in Kuala Lumpur. And so I traveled around Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore for a couple of months, visiting different friends. And then I did a secretariat at Queen's College for shorthand and, you know, any other secretarial. Like, I mean, my shorthand, which I really need to, like, scrub up on it, but I was really, really good. And from doing that, you see, I could do, like, temping jobs, which would pay quite a lot of money at the time. I mean, I'm sure they still do. So that was a, like, a kind of a bonus thing to do. And then I was studying in Florence. I was studying history of art in Florence for about 6 months. And that's where I also met some people that are still very, very good friends of mine. And why I actually ended up in LA was this girl, Consuelo, my friend in Florence. I ended up then moving to LA with her, because that's where she's from. So...
And you see, you're doing some of these jobs or some of this education, so you could earn some good money temping.
Yeah.
I mean, what was your financial situation
so
like with the family?
So my mother was good. You know, she was quite hard. You know, it's hard when you've been given everything, right, your whole life, and then suddenly it's like you're on your own. You've got to earn your own money, and it's like,
was that their attitude
mean?
As parents?
Yeah, that was like what my mother was like. And it was like, what do you mean? Like, I'm used to this really expensive lifestyle, and then suddenly I've got to, like, pay my own bills. Like, how do I do that? So, yeah, that was hard, you know. It's almost easier if, like, you're not given too much when you're younger, because suddenly, like, when that gets taken away and you have to, like, pay for that yourself, it's like, that's hard. Like... So I was doing some temping jobs. This is like in my, around like my gap year kind of time.
And had you become the it girl in the papers at this point?
This
as well?
Was before pre it girl, you know, maybe the 6 months lead up to the it girl. I worked for this company, Morrow Farrell, De Winters, which is a theatrical, agency, Music Week magazine. These were the days where, like, it was a lot more chill. Like, people were, like, smoking at their desks and, you know, like, those old days. But because I was the youngest, you know, I was always given, like, all the jobs, where the older people were, like, not really doing anything. It's like, oh, Victoria, can you do this and do this? And, yeah, then I basically started modelling and earning a lot of money, and then I was like, okay, don't need to do that anymore.
How did you get the modelling work? I mean, was that something you looked to do?
So that sort of came to me really kind of accidentally. I was very lucky to meet a well-known photographer who was the royal photographer called Patrick Litchfield. And he put me forward for this job for a big jeweling brand, jeweler, called David Morris. Oh. And I got the job, and Patrick shot the campaign, and everything kind of took off from there. Like, once you have Patrick Litchfield as the first photographer taking pictures of you, you're kind of set. So I was really lucky. And then I think the first shoot I did sort of on location, that was when I was a cowgirl in New Mexico for Tatler. And that was super fun. Got to be a cowgirl. I got to, like, lasso cows and, you know, ride Western saddles. So yeah, it was good.
And was that your full time work at that point then?
At that point, yes, it was. I was traveling a lot. Some of it was quite tiring, you know, like, you're sort of 18 and you're traveling a lot. It's like, it all looks quite glamorous, and it is glamorous because, you know, you're wearing all these beautiful couture dresses, but it's hard. The hours are long. You know, when you see a runway show, you just see the end result. Like, you don't see the rehearsals and the gearing up to it. And it's kind of like that adrenaline rush, and then you just feel exhausted afterwards, you know. So I did enjoy that. The column was good, the shot was good, and then I basically moved to LA. I had a bit of a hard time with the press over here. And
why?
I was just very much like under the microscope, you know.
Is this in a kind of a build them up, throw them down kind of way? Or
Yes, it is. And it was very easy to do that to someone like me, because I was so young at the time. And you know, I hadn't had that much experience to, like, how evil the media can be. And, you know, when I was younger, I was very much like, if a journalist tried to talk to me, I was very much like on the defense mode. And, you know, as I've grown older, I've learned it's better to be friends with them and give them what they want than just don't give them anything and just be rude to them. Because being rude to them is not going to really, like, resolve anything.
What was your parents' attitude to your or your mother's attitude at this point to your fame, if you want to call it that? Because I would imagine they didn't have it, did they?
It was sort of hard for my mother, you know. And then there was, like, GQ magazine, and it was like me in the back of a limo with this giant Afghan hound. It was a very cool shoot. But, you know, they would like to put me in kind of revealing style outfits. And for me, like, I grew up in south of France, so, like, I was never really wearing that many clothes anyway. So I think that is why, like, it didn't seem any different, really. But, yeah, I think it was sort of hard for her when I started getting, like, attention.
I mean, are there any particular stories with the press that spring to mind where, you know, you were caught doing something you shouldn't have been doing, or they spun a story that didn't really exist? You know, any real bad negative moments?
There's so many. They spun so many stories. Like, I found out years later that I was hacked at the time by the Mirror. I'm sure, like, News of the World also hacked me, but and I didn't pursue it because I was living in Los Angeles, and I just kind of, like, shut down. I remember when I first moved to LA, I didn't even come back to England for, like, at least a year and a half. And, you know, pre-social media, like, I could really go to LA and sort of disappear. You know, when David Beckham moved, it kind of, everything changed. And then suddenly there was a lot of English paparazzis that moved to LA, but pre them moving out there, it was very much like you could get lost in LA.
And is that what you wanted? You wanted to disappear?
I did. You know, most people go to Hollywood to do the opposite. I actually went to Hollywood to, like, just get away from the media.
But prior to that, when you were becoming the it girl in England, and obviously it kind of happened by accident, but when it did happen, did you relish that attention? You know,
I mean, look, it was fun. You know, I just have brands every day sending me gifts and holidays, and who doesn't want that? But it just became an increasingly sort of a pressure that as soon as I walked out the door, there's someone's taking a picture. Now, things have changed a lot. Like, since Instagram and since Twitter, there's not that kind of paparazzi attention, like, anywhere, because everyone's updating everyone anyway. So the value of a photo from a paparazzi is really not worth much anymore. Unless, obviously, if that person is, like, having an affair with someone they shouldn't be, or, but, like, a regular picture of someone just going out their front door, going shopping or whatever. Like, I know this photographer, and he said to me, God, I had a real issue selling pictures of, it was like Rihanna in a park. And normally that would go for loads, right? Park in London. And no, he got like £100 for it, £150 for it. So it's like that kind of work isn't there. So we don't get hassled as much now. I feel like it was like time I could come back to England and not be hassled like I was back then.
And just rewinding a second, just pre-LA, you opened a clothes shop. You started your own business in your early 20s. Tell me a bit about that. You know, why you wanted to do it.
I did. I would have been 24 years old at the time, my first business. And why it worked so well was, and actually, like, we had an amazing location. It was on Mockham Street, 21 Mockham Street. I had Christian Louboutin on one side, which back then it was their first store.
This is so just off Oxford Street, isn't it?
No, off Sloane Street.
Okay.
Not Oxford Street. We don't do Oxford Street. Not so classy. So Mockham Street. So, like, Christian Louboutin, it was their first store they ever had in the world. I had them on one side of me, and on the other side I had Jimmy Choo, when they only had one store in the whole world. And so, like, Mockham Street, I mean, it still is. It's an amazing street, but it was, like, super thriving at that point of, like, year 2000, 2001. And, yeah, it was a great, you know, why it worked so well originally was that I would find these designers, I would model for them, and then say, okay, I have a store. Like, do you want to stock with us? And obviously, like, Harrods would want them, but I would say, okay, if you can be with us exclusively for the first or second two seasons, and then you can go to the bigger stores. But I used to get the Al-Fayed children coming to me to buy my clothes all the time. Like, Jasmine Al-Fayed was, like, one of my really good customers. Victoria Beckham, Meg Matthews, that whole era of, like, Oasis. Yeah, they were all in my store all the time.
We had
a definitely, like, a good kind of thing going. Chris Evans at the time, he was married to Billy Piper, and they lived around the corner. And so they would be in Mockham's wine bar all the time, basically. And so it was a fun time. Nick Hucknall would come by all the time, and yeah, it was a vibe.
And after 2 years, it shut down.
So it shut down. Our boyfriends, me and my partner Jane, both our boyfriends were the investors, which, yeah, it was great getting it set up, but we sort of went through quite bad breakups. I'd been with my boyfriend about 4 or 5 years, and at that point, and when we broke up, we needed more money put in, and they were like, nope, we're not doing it. So Academy sort of, that collapsed. We went into liquidation.
Academy was the name of the store?
Yeah, it was called Academy with a K and an I.
And why did it need more money? Because obviously it sounds very successful with the people visiting. It's just
because when you have a buying season, you just need an influx of cash to buy the new collections. And it just wasn't well calculated at that point. We didn't even need that much put in, but, like, our boyfriends were like, they just wanted us to fail at that point. So then I had this new woman that was going to come in as a partner, changed the name of the store, and she totally screwed me over. So at that point, I then went into like doing this new business in my location under a different name, trading name. And then I was like, I'm done. I'm going to LA. I was spending a lot of time in LA at this point. I would usually go to LA for award season, for Oscars, and then I would never want to come back because it'd be so cold here. So I would go there for the fun, like beginning of March, and then I would stay for like a month or two. And it got to the point where I was like, okay, I just need to move to LA.
But you were going there for a fresh start, get away from England.
Mm-hmm. So I sold my flat and I just moved. I did it with my friend Consuelo. So she was already based out there.
There was never going to be a friend called Sarah, was it?
I have some good friends called Sarah, actually.
So did you have a plan of what you were going to do in LA?
Not really. I had done some TV work. I remember, like, though, I started to get my visa was kind of like the first hard bit. And so I started with an H-1B, which is a modeling visa. So I basically went on the modeling visa. But the problem is, when I first went out there, I was booked for this film, and then we're literally like on the set in Mexico. And then it's like, oh shit, I don't have the right visa to do it. Had an O-1, you know, it's become really strict. Apparently it's a lot easier just walking over the border than like actually getting it the legal way.
I've got I had an issue with my ESTA a few years ago. I lived in Vegas for 5 years.
And
had an issue with my ESTA a few years ago, and I basically don't qualify for one anymore. So I have
really?
To.
Really? Did
to...
you overstay or something?
It's a long story. Not a podcast.
Okay.
I need to get around to doing a visa, but there's so many times I've missed out on trips. And I always think, well, why don't I just fly to Mexico and pop over the border?
Just walk over. Sure, Everyone else is doing it, and they walk over the border and then they get given money and accommodation. And like, US citizens are being kicked out of their homes for these people. I'm going to freaking do it. I'm just going to put a wig on and like a mask and pretend I'm somebody else. Why not? Fake ID. Actually, a lot of them don't even have a passport.
Where did we get to? We got to your visa when you got there.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
So I started, I started, like, when I first moved, like, modelling work, bits of TV. Then I got into producing. I think one of my, like, really fun producing credits I did was, like, this guy that I met through another mutual friend. And he's, like, he knew I was sort of connected. And, you know, in America, like, the lady thing does help. And he goes, right, Victoria, I need you. I know you go to Cannes Film Festival every year. I know you know people. I've got this job for you. I need 7 celebrities booked in 4 weeks for this televised poker special in Cannes. And he's like, you know, who do you know? And I'm like, oh my God, who do I know that plays poker? That's like a big name. And I actually thought, okay, Dennis Hopper, right? So we had kind of a list of actors, and, you know, I ended up getting everybody, which is so crazy. I never even had a producer credit at this time, but obviously, like, I'd done TV, and, you know, the managers, you know, they responded, oh yeah, Lady Victoria Harvey, we've heard of her, like. And so Dennis Hopper, like, I happened to know his wife, and I'd been to an event at his house because he's respected, right? You always have to go for the eldest one who the other actors respect, because once you have that first signing, then the others will come. So I got him to agree. He happened to have 3 movies, 2 movies in Cannes that year. And, you know, so we ended up paying for his villa, and, you know, it was a pretty cushy deal. So once I had him, then I got Salma Hayek, and Salma Hayek wanted Ed Norton, her ex, and like, it just kind of went from there. And then I had Tim Robbins and Goldie Hawn and like Adrian Brody, and they all said yes, and it was nuts. And I remember, like,
This was a live game, a real game of poker.
I got them all to Cannes, and I remember like having to do like the nitty gritty, you know, with their agents and managers, and the person representing Woody Harrelson. So Woody Harrelson, what a character he is! He actually ended up winning this poker festival. His agent goes to me, right? He's on a live set in Bucharest right now, and he's going to be coming straight from Bucharest. So like, if you want him in a tux, like you need to fly it out with it. I'm going to give it to you. So they drop off this tuxedo from Dolce & Gabbana and this pair of like vegan shoes, because he's like super vegan and won't wear leather. And she's like, yeah, if you don't get this to him, he's going to just show up in shorts. So I fly with the stuff. Just before flying, I look in this box because it's like, I don't want to, you know, he's known to smoke weed and stuff. I'm like, I don't want to deal with a situation where I don't know what's in the box. So inside the shoes, there was all these notes. And I can't remember the movie he was playing at the time. I think he was like nominated for an Oscar for it. Anyway, it's all these notes like rolled into these shoes. It was so bizarre. But anyway, I met him in the hotel lobby.
What kind of notes? Sorry.
It, like notes for his movie that he was doing.
Or written notes.
Yeah, yeah, written notes, yeah. It was like, and I meet him in the lobby of the hotel, and literally he shows up like a few hours before the event in flip-flops and shorts, and I like hand him his Dolce & Gabbana suit, and I'm like, here you go, go change. And it's like those kind of moments, you know, like it's fun. It's like, wow, I can't believe I've actually pulled this off.
And you like that? You like the business? You like doing deals?
Yeah, I like doing deals, you know. For me, it's whatever comes, really. I don't kind of say that I'm in one specific industry. Like right now I'm working in commodities and fashion. I have a fashion brand I'm relaunching because I started this swimwear company just before, year before COVID, and it really like was going really well. And then the factory that I was using in Asia, China by Hong Kong, everything turned into mask factories during COVID. And everything fashion, forget it. But I am, I'm kind of been concentrating on that again now.
How do you sell it? It goes into stores or direct?
Well, most of it online, actually. I'm just getting my online store done up at the moment. I'm going to do kids as well because I think kids is a massive market.
Matching ones.
I actually did. I've got my nieces that are going to be modelling for them.
I was in the store the other day, just buying some new shorts. And
yes, it's a big thing, isn't it?
I was desperate to get some matching things.
Exactly.
But she was a bit small.
It's such a massive market, and like kids grow out of stuff so quick, so it's big. Yeah. So I'm going into children as well. But, you know, like all of us, like during COVID and stuff, we had to kind of flip into a different business. And for me, I started selling gold. I mean, it was bizarre, but, you know, I kind of have a secret life as a broker.
So we'll talk commodities in a second. We'll just finish off on the swimwear. Mm. What aspects of that do you get involved in? I mean,
I'm the designer.
Oh, you're actually designing as well.
I design every little detail, you know. It's like I choose, okay, which bit do I want the crystal on the side of the bikini with what, you know, material, and then I choose something that I like or have a design done, and then it's amazing when you see that actually like come full circle and it's actually printed, like the material is like how they make it. So that'll be launched for this summer.
What's it called?
Ladyship.
Ladyship.
So it's a kind of play on the lady, but also can be ladyship. So, yeah, I'm excited about that.
And what kind of customer, what kind of price point?
I'm doing, it's like affordable luxury. So, you know, when I look at like other brands, just say like a friend of mine's done very well, Melissa Ottobash, but mine are actually less than hers, and I think they're more exciting.
We were trying to get her booked on the show, actually, the other day.
Don't tell her that. No. But about like 180 for bikini swimsuit. Quality's good, material's good. I'm very picky about that because it's like whatever I put my name to. but I'm also doing leisure wear and then going into like bags and like I've
all under the same
I've designed
brand.
Yeah, so it's kind of, so Ladyship is like the holding brand, and then I have Ladyship Swim for the swimwear. I'm doing Ladyship Ski as well.
Oh, cool.
Ski wear's massive. Like I was just skiing about a week ago and it's huge. It's like it's something that has become so big now, having like all these new brands are emerging. And people spend a lot of money. People that ski, it's expensive. They yeah. want nice stuff.
My elder daughter just rinsed me for a couple of pairs of Salopettes.
There you
go. Cost me a fortune.
Right. It's expensive. Yeah.
And then going on to the commodities and the gold, I mean, what exactly are you doing? How did that come about?
Yeah, that just, I don't want to get into it too much, but that was just, you know, we all kind of had to flip into something new during COVID, and it was like, oh God, what am I going to do? Can't sell bikinis. That factory has now become a mask factory. So, and gold is something, you know, when the economy is so uncertain, which it has been for the last 4 or 5 years, everyone's wanting to buy gold.
So, and you're selling the physical pieces for people to take
yeah.
stock of, not like
no, like the bars
an electronic, but physically taking it. Yeah,
yeah. So gold and doing some other sort of other things.
Sounds very, very suspicious. Very
I got a
exciting.
Lot of sapphires, if you know,
oh, yeah?
if you know some jewelers at one. Yeah. So yeah, a friend of mine has some mines near Colombo, Sri Lanka. So I'm going to go visit sometime. Looks
cool.
Amazing just by looking at the pictures. Like, looks super authentic, like the way they're actually going in and getting these sapphires. So, yeah, for me, I'm an entrepreneur. I see myself as an entrepreneur. I don't see myself classed as just one thing. At the end of the day, it's like wherever you got that connection, right? That's what it is. It is a lot of it, of course, what you know, but it is who you know and a lot of this.
And, I mean, one of the main things I talk about, not on some other podcast, but in my personal content, if you like, and what I attribute, you know, a vast part of my success to is my network, is networking in general. You know, I'm spending 50% of my life networking. I mean, this podcast is a form of networking for me. I mean, how much of your, I guess, how... let's say proactive and thought out is networking for you? Because I mean, obviously, in the life you were born into, you were probably born knowing a lot of you know, very useful and influential people from childhood. I mean, do you just naturally acquire people, or do you actually think of networking as a task and activity that you do to grow your network?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. But, you know, like when I moved to America, it was almost like I was rebelling against all that. I was rebelling against my network, right? I just wanted to go be like free and live in California and live in T-shirts and shorts and be in the sun all year round and really not have a responsibility, because most people in Hollywood don't work. You know, you go to a supermarket in the daytime and LA and it's like super crowded, whereas other places, like, people have an office job. But I think the last few years changed all that, because more and more people work from home now. More and more people learned that actually they don't need to spend a huge amount of rent getting an office when they can actually work from home. I forgot what I was saying now. What was the question?
I was asking you if growing your network is a proactive
network.
Task.
But yeah, I mean, I suppose it's a... You know, my friends tell me that I do it naturally. I am quite a sociable person. I'm a Libra, apparently. My sign is quite a sociable sign. So I do like being around people. I do have nights at home quite regularly, though. People think I'm this like crazy party girl, but actually, no, I like being home with my dog a lot of the time. But yeah, the network thing, the thing is, like my mother always said to me, she's like, you're not going to meet anyone sitting at home, right? You're not going to improve your life. And the thing is, what I've learned is like one baby step leads to another one, leads to another one. So I could be at an event and I reconnect with someone I haven't seen for maybe 10 years, because this kind of situation happens all the time. And then they tell me about, oh, you should be coming to this. And so I would never even heard about this other thing if I hadn't gone to that first event. And then suddenly, you know, you can meet whoever. Like, you might meet the person that is going to help you with a business or anything. So I try and force myself to be social sometimes, even when I'm not feeling it, because once I'm out, I feel so much better.
And what brought you back to England from LA? Why did you kind of
change your mind? Joe Biden and, America is not quite what it used to be. And I've literally watched it fall apart, especially California. California is quite, it's having a huge problem with homelessness and crime. And I think at the point of 3 years ago when I had to buy a gun because the police, the head of the Beverly Hills police and LAPD actually went on the television and said, we cannot guarantee your safety. Like, they were telling people if they didn't need to come to LA to not, please not come, and actually encouraged us to buy guns to arm ourselves. At that point, I was like, you know what? I can't live like this. I never even left, and I lived in a good area. But the problem is, like, when I first moved to LA, it felt very safe. Like, when I was living in Beverly Hills, literally kept my door open. Never felt unsafe. And now it's like, it's bad. I mean, I'm sure I had some kind of PTSD when I got back, because I was so used to, like, having either a taser or, like, a pepper spray. You're not even allowed that here, I don't think. But I was so used to automatically having that with me, even when I walked the dog.
Did you carry the gun as well?
No, didn't have the gun. Kept that, like, in the house. But I never went outside without a taser, you know. And the thing is, like, in LA, it's a lot of these homeless that are so high on drugs and they're so crazy. Like, I had one, like, throwing glass at me, you know, telling how he wanted to kill my dog just because my dog barked at a squirrel. Like, that's what dogs do. It just got very sketchy. I know someone else that someone came up behind them as they were walking down the street and, like, started strangling them. Like, this was happening. My best friend from yoga, that the thing I actually miss about LA the most are my yoga classes. I did Kundalini and my school's amazing over there. But my friend Trish from yoga, she had a bullet shot through her engine. And, like, she was just driving along on the border of Beverly Hills and Venice, on Santa Monica Boulevard. And she hears this noise and she thinks it's her tire. She thinks she's, like, run over something. So she stops. And her mechanic tells her, like, the next day, no, you have a bullet through your engine. Like, you know how that is, like, so scary. And that is not the only story. Like, other people I know have had other encounters. And so it just got to the point where I was like, you know what, this is just, like, this could happen to me at any moment. Like, I need to get out of here. And I miss my family, you know. My mother's not getting any younger. I mean, she's in great shape. But still, like, I feel like I need to be around for my family at this point. My brother, my nephews and nieces, you know, and my sister, she lives in Portugal. Just being closer to family. LA is so far away.
Do you not find England a dangerous place now? Certainly compared to where you left.
I know, but everyone says, oh, England's so dangerous. No, we got it good here. And I try and tell my friends that live here that complain about England, I'm like, go to LA, go see what's going on over there. Then you will go to New York and see the situation over there. It's way worse. I mean, I know it's not, like, super fabulous in England all the time, but it's nothing like over there. Like, I don't feel like my life is in danger like it was over there.
I mean,
and the Brits love to complain, you know.
We do that really well. We do. But, I mean, obviously, I spent the last few years in Dubai, and, I mean, you get used to a real next level of safety,
so
safety there.
You know? I have friends that moved to Dubai as well, and they love it. They you know, when I go and visit, it's like, they're like, don't worry, you can leave your phone on the table and walk away and it'll still be there.
I mean, people reserve sunbeds with
Everyone
watches.
Everyone can wear your watch, you know. I mean, no, England, you can't wear a watch either. Mm. There it's like you can bring the watches out and you can just leave things on the tables. Like, you know, if you're in a restaurant sitting outside, you're not going to get someone just swooping in and stealing it. No, it does. It feels safe. Makes sense if you had lived in Vegas, because I feel like Dubai is the sort of Arab version of Vegas.
It's like Vegas without gambling, although we've just got it now.
It's Vegas with rules.
Yeah.
Right? But what I like about Dubai is it has a mixture of, like, everything. It's got, like, every nice restaurant that we can think of, it's in Dubai, right? They have everything there.
So we can't have Lady V here without talking about some royal gossip and some juicy things. But I guess to warm us up on that, you quite famously dated Prince Andrew for a time a while back.
I don't really want to go into that part so much, but he is a friend, and I have been pretty much the only person defending him publicly. In the whole fake photo scandal, Virginia Giuffre.
As in the photo that came out?
Yeah. So I really want the person who recently went into detail about the Kate Middleton photo that they found, you know, was heavily edited. I mean, I didn't even see that as it was edited right away. That Prince Andrew Virginia photo, there's literally over 50 things wrong with that photo. And
I've been a bit out of touch with all this for a while, so forgive me if this is common knowledge now. So, so is it a publicly stated thing that it's a fake photo?
Well, Ghislaine has said in her interview a year ago, she said there's actually over 50 things wrong with it. I've also found that amount. I have a witness that is coming forward soon, and I have a whistleblower as well who is on a gag order until May. But once that comes off, like, the gloves are off. Like, you know, the public will be able to learn a lot more about the truth behind it.
And what would the origin of that photograph be?
So I'm actually in contact also with the real photographer, but he was scared to come out for a long time because obviously, like, it's a criminal offense, really, what he's done. And because he does have he was in prison for something really stupid that happened to him, but, you know, he has that on his record. And so he's been very nervous, but we plan to get that out. I have this guy, George Tonks, who's the whistleblower. So as soon as his story comes out, I will bring in the photographer.
Why is he gagged?
He is gagged because he's being silenced, because the US courts are very corrupt. And he's literally the whistleblower in this FBI case that is happening at the moment.
And what do you suggest the agenda is? As in, you know, who's leading it? You know, who's
It was Epstein and Virginia, but this was literally like an attack on the royal family that was premeditated, and Prince Andrew was like, he has been the scapegoat for this whole thing.
Has he and Jeffrey fallen out prior to this thing?
I don't think so. I think. Well, I mean, at the time, like, this was premeditated. Like, this happened back in 2001, and they were still friends, you know, after that. But the girls that I have investigated, complete con artists, liars. So, you know, it just kind of makes you think, well, like, obviously Jeffrey Epstein, he definitely played the field, and he, you know.
Did you know Jeffrey?
I did. Yeah, I knew him through Ghislaine Maxwell, but I think she has been treated completely unfairly as well. And
did you, I mean, when you say know him, as in like a little bit, or you spent a lot of time together?
I mean, I knew her, like, we had a lot of friends in common.
Not Jeffrey, sorry, Jeffrey.
Oh, Jeffrey?
Yeah, so I said, yeah, did you know Jeffrey?
Oh, no, I mean, I knew him through her.
Okay.
You know.
But,
I mean, the only thing that I thought was weird was when I stayed in one of the apartments, like, and I had this, like, weird sensation, like, I felt like I was being filmed or something. But besides that, I went to dinners that were totally normal. I never saw girls that were underage. You know, he was kind of like that guy that you see in Saint-Tropez at lunch, you know, in one of the popular places with a bunch of, like, good-looking people around them. Like, that was what it looked like. But I think the timing of it all it was cleverly timed, you know, by the lawyers that this story would come out during Jubilee, so they would just pay her off and be done with it. And, you know, that isn't how it turned out. Like, it's been, you know, ongoing. And, you know, I'm hoping, like, in the next few months, Prince Andrew can be exonerated from all of this.
As his low profile being purely off the back of this, is it?
Well, he just wants, we've got to, you know, get through the next few months, basically. But a lot will be revealed end of May, when my witness will be off a gag order.
And you, I mean, you use the words like, you know, my witness or my, you know, I'm doing this. I mean, is this in the capacity of a friend of Andrew? Have you got some
no,
you
no,
do
no.
Some
the,
official
the, the,
thing
the whistleblower
here?
Guy is a guy who's based in Chicago. I haven't actually met him in person. We've just been talking for about a year and 3 months or so. He is the person that has the evidence on that Virginia lied and Maria Farmer lied about a lot of it as well, and it will help Galen.
But your role in this is just as friends of
those
two.
Oh yeah,
two
no.
Trying
for
to...
me, it's just like I just want this whole thing to go away because, like, you know, originally I did some interviews for a couple of networks. I can't even remember which ones I've done. I've done so many at this point, and I didn't want to get too close to it because it's very hard, you know, with this Me Too movement. It takes like a lot to stand up to it and go, actually, no, they lied, because you know you're going to have everyone after you for saying that. And in 2019, on Piers Morgan's show at the time when he was doing the breakfast show, I said, I think that photo looks fake. And I said about the girls saying, this is not girls that are trafficked. Like, for me, in my head, knowing stories of trafficking, like, girls that are trafficked are literally chained up and, like, beaten and put in a cage and, you know, raped all day long. They're not girls, like, on a yacht drinking champagne, getting flown in and, like, you know, these girls were all, like, hookers, basically. They're all hookers. Sarah Ransom, like, I found her original agency that she was at with her agency pictures and everything. Like, they're cool girls. They're not sweet little innocent girls. They knew exactly what they were doing. And actually, none of them were even living in Epstein's house in New York. They all had boyfriends and they all had their own apartments. They could come and go as they wanted. So there was no, like, forced anything.
Terrible. I'll be interested to see how it all plays out.
Yeah. I literally just want my life back because it's got to a point where it really did take over my life. And, you know, I'm living in this weird bubble with a few of us knowing, like, the truth. And it's like it gets hard for me sometimes to actually, like, talk to people in, like, real life because we're living in this, like, weird bubble. So, yeah, I want it to get back to normal.
Talk to me about Prince Harry. You've spoken out about that recently, saying that you think he should be back here.
It's really hard, right? He's in love with this woman who has taken him away from his family and his friends. And
do you know him personally, by the way?
Met him years ago. I haven't seen him recently. And he's someone that is, like, he was very well loved by Britain, and pretty much everyone loved Prince Harry. You know, he's like the rebel royal. Yeah. He's kind of cool. Like, he's off in Vegas. Like, you know. But he was seen as like the cool rebel who was like had a kind heart. And then he falls for this woman who has completely kind of taken over his mind. And no one seems to be able to get through to him. But it was like, I always said in the beginning, I have a feeling she's going to take him to America. You know, that's what a lot of these narcissistic type of people they do, especially like the covert narcissists. Like, they want to take them away from their surroundings, from their friends, and keep them away so they can control them. And that is like what has happened to him. I mean, he moved to LA at the worst time in history. Like, he moved there like during COVID. It was like terrible there. So literally, like, he moved as I was getting ready to leave and couldn't wait to leave. But yeah, do I see that lasting? I really don't see it lasting. But the problem is those kids now, like, where are they going to go? Like, she's not going to obviously move back here. And I don't think she would be welcomed here. But for Harry to make up with William, you know, I don't see those two making up while Harry is still married. I think it'll take years to repair. But if he is on his own and he kind of apologizes for his behavior, I mean, I also think, like, Kate's cancer is probably, you know, aided by a lot of the stress that they've caused them.
And you say that you believe they're playing the part of victim to gain attention, etc.
Yeah, it is. It's this whole victimhood. It's this whole sort of leftist victim. Oh my God, look at me, poor me. Like, no, Harry. Like, look at you. You're living this amazing life. Like, you know, oh, everyone has trauma. Like, everyone has childhood trauma. Like, I lost my dad young. I lost two brothers young. Like, we all have to get over it. I think the me, me, me thing, it just doesn't work. But he was never like that before he met Meghan. Like, this is a new thing. It's almost like he met her and she's sort of become his, like, therapist. And that book was just, it's just terrible. Like, how can you write a book on your family like that? You know, I just don't know what the other books, you know, it's supposed to be like a 4 or 5 book contract.
Oh,
so
really?
I don't know what's going on with those ones. You know, we've got the Meghan autobiography, haven't we? And then there's a book that they're doing together on, like, a lifestyle sort of book, apparently. So, yeah, who knows? But I think, the UK, I did feel sorry for her in the beginning, I got to say. Like, I know how evil the press can be here, but she didn't play the game. You know, how could she think that she's going to marry Prince Harry and everything's going to be easy? Like, she obviously went in thinking, like, this sort of Cinderella story. And she likes to do, like, the kind of fancy events, right? She didn't want to be going to hospitals every day, like the kind of stuff that Kate does. And then she's like, okay, I'm peacing out. I'm going back to Hollywood. But I think it'll get to a point where she'll just dump Harry. She'll, like, go off with some sort of, you know, billionaire type. And he'll be sort of thrown out. I don't know.
I just
don't see it ending well. I think Harry is just too much of a nice guy. And I think he's been completely, like, his mind has been taken over. But you can't tell anyone, right? When they're in love, like, you can't tell them. And then afterwards, they're like, why didn't you tell me? It's like, Harry, the whole world has been telling you.
Well, just in a slightly different vein, speaking about victims, you spoke out recently as well about your sister who has been subject to domestic violence, but, what, 2 weeks to speak for herself?
Yeah, I mean, you know, she then actually did an interview. I thought it would be really important for her to do it. Because, you know, this thing had been going on. She only told her family, like, a few years ago about it.
At what point did she split up with the husband?
Well, about a year ago, he ran off with another woman. He ran off with the woman who is, like, the agent selling their house. And then, like, moved in with her within about 3 weeks and just left. And that was the best thing for her because, if he hadn't done that, then, you know, it would have been a lot harder for her to leave. So she gave him the ultimatum and he left. But it's been very hard for her. Obviously, like, 3 small children. He left her with pretty much, like, nothing. I mean, she's living in this mansion, but, like, you know, when I went there in December, he cut the heat off. She had electricity, but there was no heat. I was like, I open the door and she's got, like, a puffer jacket on inside and I'm like, God, this is really bad. He wouldn't put the heat back on and it was in his name and the company would not put it into her name. Can you imagine that? So luckily we were, like, in the middle of changing lawyers and the new lawyer managed to do an agreement with his lawyer and the heating came back on. But I said to her, how long has the heat off been off? And she lives in Portugal, so look, it's not as cold as England, but it gets pretty chilly there in December, you know? He'd had the heating off, I suppose, like the whole time, you know, because you don't need heating there in like October, but it probably starts like November, December. So yeah, it's been really hard. I think the kids are the ones that are really suffering.
Will she be coming back to England?
When that happened with the house, the oldest one, Victor, he said to my sister, he's like, I know Daddy is killing the house because he doesn't want us to spend time here anymore. So like the kids know that their father was making the house cold, so they didn't want to be in that house. And then my sister's done really well with her cycling, and she got into the in the team for representing Great Britain. And I was meeting her in Scotland in the summer. She calls me up crying at the airport the day before, or the day she was flying, and she's like, oh my goodness, he basically got a court order done. She was at the airport with her youngest daughter, India, because India is very prone to getting like sick more because she was a twin and the twin died. And he got this thing when my sister Sonny was going to be arrested at the airport because she was flying with India to Scotland. And I said, look, just go back to the house. We'll figure it out. I ended up booking her a new flight to go the following morning. She made it to the championship. And, I said, you have to like prove him wrong because he's just trying to break her right now. And for him, it was like, oh yeah, what she's good at, I'm going to stop her going. Like, this was a massive thing that she was representing Great Britain in this. So it's been hard for her, but the cycling has really helped her a lot. And now getting the voice out, and it sort of got to a point where I was like, Isabella, like, I need your permission to stop putting out those photos on Instagram and like, let's see what reaction we get. And of course, like, journalist friends of mine messaged me quite quickly and were like, wow, I can't believe this. And I was like, yeah, it's time. But that took a lot for her to be brave because the retaliation was crazy. And every time she does something, you know, he fights back with something else. So it's been hard, but I was a witness in court for her about 10 days ago. So I'm...
You've got a full-time job taking care of friends and family.
I know, it is. So that's another thing. It's just like better that I live in England now when I'm dealing with stuff like with my sister and I can fly to Portugal like easily, you know, and LA was getting to be like too far away to do things last minute.
Well, it's been a whirlwind of a life over the last 30-ish years. What have we got to look forward to? What big projects are on the horizon?
We shall see. Right now, yeah, I'm concentrating on Ladyship, my brand, so that's sort of like number one right now.
And any other particular passions or interests?
Passions and interests. Just like my hobbies, I love sport.
What sport do you do?
Horse riding or water sports, skiing, those type of things. I love traveling. Like for me, travel, it just kind of keeps me like, it gives me that boost of energy when I'm away. My mother always says to me, I don't understand. You love traveling. She's like, but your grandfather was a diplomat. My grandfather was a diplomat for South America. And she's like, you must get it from him because I feel alive. Like I love being home. But as soon as I'm in like a new place and new surroundings, like I feel like alive, you know, that feeling.
I like the destinations. I just hate the travel.
Yeah. I don't like the airports.
Well, listen, Lady Victoria.
Good to meet you.
Thank you very much for being here. Thank you for being our poshest and
and
most socialite and royalist guest that we've ever had.
Okay.
It's been a pleasure having you here. Along with the swimwear brand, just for anyone watching or listening, you know, who wants to maybe buy that or catch up with you, where can we find you online?
So my website is ladyshipswim.com, which is being made right now. But I have an Instagram as well, which is ladyshipswim. So that will tell you more updates. And I'm hoping to kind of you know, start my own show at some point soon as well.
Well, you can have me as a guest.
So, yeah. I get asked to be doing a podcast and I'm like, I know, it's just like, it's just starting it, isn't it? It's like that little first bit of getting the setup and your mic and all of the git.
But if you want any top tips,
yes,
I'm here
I
for
do.
You.
I need tips. Thank you.
Thank you very much again.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Stripping Off with Matt Haycox. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this week's episode, but please remember to subscribe or to follow, and please, please leave a review. If you can leave a review, that's how we move up the algorithm, that's how we get to the top of the charts, and that's how I can keep bringing you bigger and better guests that you'll love each week. Have you got any suggestions for guests? Have you got any burning questions you want to ask? Well, slide into my DMs on social at Stripping Off with Matt Haycox.